Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to this episode of 20 Minute Tims, as a Celtic story is now ongoing in the SEC Armadillo. I'm delighted to be joined by some of the cast, crew and writers of it. So first up, we'll go with Martin McCormick. Martin McCormick, welcome to the podcast. What is your role in the Celtic story?
Yep, my name is Martin McCormick and I am the adapter, writer and director of this version of the Celtic story.
Lovely stuff. We also have Kathleen McDermott. Kathleen, what is your role?
I am one of the stars of the Celtic story, playing various characters throughout the show.
That's very good. Role. And we also have Ken McCluskey. Ken, what's your role?
I've got the very nice title of musical director, and I'm working with the band and arranging the songs, and wrote a song especially for the play as well. So, we've been doing all those things and it's been really, really enjoyable.
Lovely stuff. So now I'm going to try and get your Celtic credentials off you, see if you're in this for love or money. Martin, are you a Celtic fan?
I'm about as dyed in the wool as it comes. My days are an absolute disgrace and a nightmare when they lose, and when they win, I'm everybody's best pal.
Lovely stuff. Kathleen, what about you?
Yes, I'm a Celtic fan from day one. I have family that have actually played for Celtic, so yes, I've been brought up with it. I have two granders, great-granders that played for Celtic on both sides of my family, from my mum and dad, so it means a lot to them to have me in the Celtic story and to be able to watch me up on the big stage. It means a lot to me to do that for them.
Oh, that's brilliant. That is tremendous. And Ken, what about you? Right, lifelong Celtic fan?
I'm going to have to update my credentials here, right? Yes, longly Celtic fan. I'm from Lanarkshire. I went to school with people like George McCluskey, Paul McStay, Willie McStay, etc. My mum's cousins are married to Davy Hay and Jimmy Johnson, respectively. So that's my credentials.
A wee bit of showing off here, but that's fine, that's fine, that's fine.
I know, I'm just raging that I went first there.
Well, it was Catherine, she started it.
I know, I could have been hitting it where I went to school with Josh McKinley, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right, I mean. You missed out there, man.
You need to get these things in early. So what I'll do is I'll go around yous again, as we're going to be talking about the Celtic story. What's each of your Celtic story? What's your first memory of Celtic, and what's your first sort of season you remember watching Celtic?
I'll go first. So my first memory of Celtic, or my first memory of being taken to a Celtic game, was a reserve match. Mick McCarthy had just come back because he'd broken his leg, and a guy called Crawford Baptie, who won't be a name that's synonymous with anyone other than the fact...
Two surnames, but I think we can guess. Yeah, I think
two surnames, and when you reverse them, they could still mean the same thing. he went right through the back of Mick McCarthy, and Mick McCarthy just pulled him up, like grabbed him up to standing height, and just punched him, and then just walked off the field, and knocked him out, and just ran away as the referee tried to chase after Mick McCarthy. Mick McCarthy was obviously telling him in his own inevitable way to where to go exactly. And I just remember that so clearly, and just going, this is what it's going to be like. This is magic. That's my first memory of a game, and the first memory of just sheer joy and all that kind of thing was in about 1987 in Salou. In fact, it would have been 87 in Salou. Celtic winning the Scottish Cup, and my family being told over the phone that we'd won it, and we were all gathered around the phone on holiday because we couldn't find it anywhere. And there was a load of us on a holiday because my grand had just retired and got his pension. He'd paid for us all to go to Salou. And we phoned another family member and they told us, and I remember it was just us just going bananas that we'd won it. And then other people found out through us that we'd won it, and then just all these Celtic supporters that night bringing Salou to a standstill.
Lovely stuff. What about you, Kathleen?
I remember when I was about 7 or 8, my dad took me and my sister to a football game, and it was a trophy day that day. And I remember we were playing Aston Villa, I think it was, and I had a green jacket, a green pencil skirt, and the inside of my jacket, the lining was green and white stripes, and my dad bought his green white and gold bonnets. So it was like, going into here, and I'm standing right at the front, and I remember standing shouting. I waited till it was really, really quiet, and I shouted, "Come on, Tommy Barnes!" And he scored. And then this guy that was like 2 rows behind us like tapped us on the shoulder. He's like, "Do that again, Hen. Shout it again. You might score another one." I was like, "Oh my god!" And it was one of the best memories I've ever experienced because it was the jungle back then. So it's like you started off in one area and ended up in a different area because you were just jumping all over the place. Brilliant experience, I'll never forget it.
Lovely stuff. What about yourself, Ken?
My first memory of knowing what Celtic was and the whole deal was, I'm a bit older than Martin and Kathleen, so, or a good bit. So I remember celebrations in my house for the European Cup final, and the guy next door, the woman next door's boyfriend, had went to Lisbon. So it was a really sunny day, and I was sitting in the step, and we didn't have front gardens or anything. It was just like a bit of grass. So I remember a man sort of stoating about, and he was taking ages to get down the road in a huge big stock of rock, green, white, and gold rock. And he got to the door, and he pressed the buzzer of the door, and there was nobody in. He collapsed. And I went over to see him with a Celtic hat on and a knitted, hand-knitted scarf and all that. And that was the day after Lisbon. But my first game that I really remember, 1971, it was 6-1 against Clyde, and it was the last time the Lisbon Lions ever went on the field together. So they all lined up. Ronnie Simpson came on for about 5 minutes or whatever, because he was quite old by this point. It would be 1971, maybe 72, but I think it was 71. 6-1, Betty all sat in the ball, and my dad knew a brickie, because they were building a new stand, which is the old stand now. So it hadn't been built yet. So the players came out a wee tunnel at the side, and we were just on a building site because my dad was a bricklayer, and he knew a guy called Jimbo Holland who was actually building the stand, so he could get free tickets. And we just sat in there. We stood in the building site, watched the game. 6-1.
Brilliant. You've all passed. You've all given me your credentials. So that's all good, all good. Continue on. So the Celtic story is back after a wee break. Martin, what made it come back? What was the thinking behind it all?
The thing about it come back was the 88 version ends in 88, and the plans had been in place for a while now to effectively update it, because obviously just so much has happened since then. So the producers of this production had gone to great lengths. Also, one of the producers of this, David Lowe, was reasonably instrumental. Maybe I'm being a bit of an understatement, but it was extremely influential in the Fergus McCann takeover. So I think that was something that we felt had to be kind of front and centre of it. Certainly the second act, the first act of the show is the first 100 years, and the second act is what's happened since.
So how did you get involved then? What was the process?
So originally. Myself and someone called Martin McCarty, who's actually been in one of the versions of this, the 1998 remount of the Celtic story. Martin worked and trained as an actor for many years, a bit like myself, and then he went into writing and directing. So last year I wrote and directed a play for Perth Theatre called Oh Win the Saints, which was about the day that St Johnstone won the first Scottish Cup. I'm probably not doing St Johnstone that much of a disservice by saying it's one of the few interesting things that's happened to them, apart from the dub, obviously. But it was very much like a community orientated show. Like, we involved community cast members, and did a lot of kind of research. I had to do a lot of research on it because it's effectively it's my local football team, but I knew nothing about them. And as far as I was concerned, there wasn't particularly anything interesting about them. But there's a lot of really interesting human stories connected with the club, so it was more like that. But with Celtic, it's like, so with that thing with St Johnstone, it's like, what can we find to put in? Because we need to find lots of material. It's the opposite with Celtic. You're like, what? You know, people are coming up to me and going, you didn't mention Jimmy Delaney, or you didn't mention Johnny Doyle, or John Doyle. You didn't mention, you know, like the day the 10 men won the league. You know, you didn't mention, you know, literally go on all day about the vast amount of stuff. So, but the other thing about this was very much to position it so it was from a Celtic fan's point of view. Wildcat, who did this originally, did this. I mean, it was just this enormous thing. I remember the production at the time, and not being old enough to go to it, but I just remember it being this like milestone in theatre because nobody had ever made a play about football. So the kind of the thing that was kind of front and centre of this one was to update it so that it reflected the a fan's experience, so they could, when it came to the musical numbers, that they could really join in. So that's something that we've done. And in fact, you know, Ken, myself, and Kieran McEnany, who's in the band, and also wrote a new song for this production as well. So that's been it. Martin McCarty, who was involved in this, got me involved as a result of writing this St Johnstone play. And he didn't need to, Martin, he didn't need to ask me my credentials, because he's been a Celtic game with me before, so he knew exactly what my credentials were.
Fair enough, mate. So Ken, how did you get involved in, how did you take a break from your rock and roll lifestyle to get involved with this?
Well, my lifestyle, not that too rock and roll. The last couple of years, I've been a teacher for about 20 years, so I got a real job when I was 39, when I started having kids with my missus. So I had to go and get a real job, so I went to uni and got a degree, and I started teaching. I worked at a college called Stowe College, which then changed into Glasgow Kelvin College. And I taught music business management. It's like business studies, but to do with copyright and, right, you know, royalties and all that, and contracts. So I did that for 20 years, and then I just retired about 3 months ago. So I was approached by some of the team, and they said, oh, would you be interested in this? I went, well, that'd be perfect. I finished work in June, end of June, go to Portugal for a couple of weeks, then I start work on this. Perfect. So it's so different from teaching, and it's so different from being in a band. I'm really of the opinion, I really follow the doctrine of lifelong learning. You learn new stuff's brilliant. And working in different environments is excellent. And seeing different people doing their craft is just, you know, it's amazing, especially watching the actors and directors and, you know, all the other stuff, the dressers, the people like doing all the costumes and the choreographers and all that. It's really eye-opening, you know.
What about the song Celtic did it first? I don't need to ask what that's about, but how did that come about?
Martin had the idea for the title, and we just had a jam around it. Basically, we just I just listed loads of stuff, and Kieran listed loads of stuff, and we kind of put them together and just came up quite naturally. And had a good idea for a riff, a kind of riff, and it was something. I had this idea of call and response, so we just and then the audience sing Celtic did it first or whatever. So we put our heads together and just came up with it. So it was good. It was done very organically.
It was that amazing thing for me, like Ken saying, sorry if I'm interrupting, but it was that amazing thing, no, Ken saying, like the theatre of the experience of seeing how a theatre production's put together as an eye-opener. It was a total eye-opener for me how a song can be put together, because I'd never done anything like that in my life. But I think one of the things that's made this job a lot easier is a combination of sort of serendipity and it being a conscious choice. Like, a lot of people that are involved in this are Celtic-minded people as well. They do have credentials. So it's meant that a lot, the alchemy of all that's kind of meant that it's come together in a kind of surprisingly, not easy way, but, you know, much, much more simplistic and, you know, just a much more simple way than perhaps would have been. Because I'd never written a song before, and we just sat. I think we were in your living room, Kevin.
This very living room. That very piano.
The magic room.
That piano.
So it was about 2 hours or something, and that was it done. I was like, I'd just like to write a song. That's easy.
We took it away and fine tuned it a wee bit, but most of it was done then,
That's class how it all comes about. But Martin, I thought when you said what makes this thing easiest is going to be the stars of the show. So Kathleen, how did you get involved and what have you done in your previous life before getting involved with this?
Well, that's the thing. I've not actually done a lot of theatre at all. I think the closest thing I've did to theatre was a play of Pie and a Pint at Oran Moor before doing this show. So it has been quite daunting for me. Because it's just a whole new experience. I'm so used to just being in front of a camera for TV and film, but theatre is a whole new experience. So there was a lot of times, even in rehearsals, where I was feeling a little bit like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this, but now, and I'm in it, and I'm doing it, I know I can do it, and I'm absolutely loving every minute of it. But doing before getting the role, I remember looking at it because I had just came back from Portugal and I was only back about 2 weeks, and I got the email to say, would I be interested in doing this? And I phoned my agent straight after reading the email and I was like, do you really need to ask me if I really would be interested in doing this? Of course I will. So I made the mistake of actually telling my parents that I was going for the audition, which I wish I hadn't, because it was extra pressure on you better get this type thing. But I went in and I did my thing and I waited a full week before they even told us if they'd got it or not, which was absolutely so destroying waiting on it. And every day my mum and dad kept phoning going, have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? I was like, no, no, no. And then we're going for dinner that night, well, the Friday, and they phoned us on the Thursday and told us, and I waited to tell them, and they were over the moon. My dad was just, my mum says he got up the next day after telling them, and he was like, can't believe my daughter's in the Celtic story, I just can't believe it. So out of everything I've done in my career, this has to be at the top of the list for my family.
How long were rehearsals?
It was quite short in rehearsals, wasn't it? It was only about, in total, from rehearsing to opening day, it's only been 3 weeks, wasn't it?
3 weeks in the rehearsal room, and then we did about
four days of tech,
and then opened the Thursday. It was an extremely short rehearsal process, but I think it's that kind of thing I was saying earlier on, because everyone's association with the club, and some people's association, in fact, one of the cast in it, David McKay, was in the original. Because everyone's associated with the club and the Celtic story as well. Like, think that there's two separate entities. Like, it kind of everyone just really, really pulled together. But you're right. Like, a show of this enormity, because it's an enormous show with so many component parts. Ordinarily, you'd be looking at 4 or 5 weeks rehearsal, but everyone really managed to pull together.
From a musical point of view, I'm digging what Martin's saying. That's a happy word, digging. But because I'm old, right? But musically, I was thinking, like, so we had a little band of us working together, and then one of the players, one of the fiddle players, couldn't make it, so we had to quickly get another fiddle player in. And so I put a wee shout out. I know quite a few different fiddle players, and I was thinking, and a lot of them didn't know, they wouldn't know Hail, Hail, the Celts Are Here. They wouldn't know Over and Over. They wouldn't know blah, blah, you know, the traditional Celtic songs. And I was like, that's a bit of a nightmare actually teaching somebody that from scratch. Whereas I went to St. Rock's school, you know, the school, they've got the coldest musicians and traditional Irish musicians based on traditional Irish folk music. And there's a guy called Frank McCardle, and I phoned him up and I said, Frank, I know him from before, working with John McCusker and all these great young traditional people who'd been there, taught there. It's a free after-school class. I said, Frank, if I'm looking for a fiddle player and maybe somebody that maybe like Celtic a wee bit. And he went, I've got the perfect boy for you. He can play Keep You Uppy and play the fiddle at the same time. And I went, bang, you're the man. And then the other one, Kieran McEnany, because when I was a teacher, we'd at the college, we had a label called Electric Honey, which I ran with the students. And Kieran's band were signed to the label, so I knew he was a good musician, he was versatile. So he's a multi-instrumentalist, for example, and he's a good understanding of music, so he was number one. And then we got Daniel in, and Daniel's been fantastic. And you don't have to start from scratch, you know what I mean? You don't have to start from, because they're Celtic supporters, you know?
Yeah. That's good. It seems to have all come together very quickly. 3 weeks of rehearsals, and then bang, 31st August, the opening night. What was that like for you all? Kathleen, you first off, like being on stage, it must have been terrifying. Oh, I know the guys backstage work hard, but you've got the tough job being out in front of the crowd.
Oh, absolutely terrifying, Disney cut it. I was a nervous wreck because they did a dress run that morning and I was like a deer in the headlights. I just was all over the place and it started to give me the fear. So I thought, oh my God, it's opening night tonight and I just had a total disaster of a dress run. And then I didn't make any mistakes on the opening night, so I was quite chuffed with myself. I went home that night and I was like, can't believe I just did that. Can't believe I actually pulled it off compared to what I'd actually done in the morning. So, but people said that to me. I mean, the cast have been very, very supportive of me through the entire, from start to finish. They've been my rock. Any questions I've had, they've been there to help me throughout the way. And that is exactly what they said to me, because I was quite a bit taken aback after the dress run. And they were like, no, they say that if you have a really bad dress run, you're going to have a really good night. And that's how it panned out for me on the opening night. So I was quite happy.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
And you had a big special guest there to see the first night as well, didn't we?
Yeah, totally. And, yeah, no, Fergus, but yeah, my husband and my kids, they're my biggest critics. They were there that night as well, so... And apparently my son was shouting out, hi, Mum, and I didn't even hear him. So. But hey-ho, he was shouting at me afterwards, saying, how come you never waved back to me? You never shouted to me. I was like, working.
Fair enough. So Fergus McCann's there on the first night. He's a special guest. What about you, Martin and Ken? How did you feel with a guy of that stature? When you tell the Celtic story, that's obviously going to be a big part of it. And for that guy to be there must be something special.
Yeah, I mean, I'd known for about a month in advance that he was coming over. And one of the actors in the cast plays Fergus McCann for quite a long time. And then when I saw his costume, this like in rehearsals we did a lot of costume fittings, and you're as a director you're in that process just to kind of give your overview or your opinion on things. And I remember seeing the Fergus costume, and it was like a kind of just a very plain suit, a bow tie, and a cap. And I thought, oh, I can't really think Fergus can ever wore that combination. And then on the press night, when I bumped into Fergus McCann, what do you think he's wearing? The actual man himself. I just thought actor Billy Mack had strolled off stage in costume, and he would carry a glass of wine about in the Radisson Red at half 10 at night. I was like, no, it's actually Fergus McCann. And he apparently he really enjoyed it. I mean, we took a bit of artistic license. I don't want to spoil the show for anyone that's seen it, but I don't think Fergus McCann ever did a solo song at any point. it was very flattering that he took the time to come over and see us, because he doesn't even live in this continent anymore, you know.
When I saw Billy Mack with his suit on and the side of the stage, I just thought it was absolutely brilliant, because he's got the mannerisms and he's got the voice and he's really good at it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just perfect. I just thought his wee hat and all that was just perfect. And the audience really react to it a lot, because it's quite a big monologue. The audience really react to Fergus. Because remember when he was hoisting the league flag at Parkhead?
People
booed him, man, and that was a disgrace. You know, absolute disgrace. So it's payback time, you know what I mean, to a certain extent as well. Guy turned everything around, you know.
When you watch the clips of the video, Fergus looks as if he was loving it. You see him smiling and laughing at all these clips, and you're just like, he must have been, how mad would it be to be sitting in an audience and watching somebody portray him? And I remember talking to somebody at the after party, and they said that they were sitting behind him, and they said while he was watching the show, he was like saying, oh, aye, that's how it happened. It really did happen like that. Or it wasn't quite like that, but it did happen like that. I mean, that must be such a weird experience, watching yourself in scenarios that you've actually been in and somebody else portraying it, and then saying that is how it was done. That is exactly how it went down.
I think also as well his character, because he's not like, you know, some sort of big tycoon or something like that, you know, flown in. He's just like a normal man. He looks like a man of his age, you know, he's maybe flamboyancy as his tartan bow tie or his wee hat or something like that. But it's quite a character.
He got a cheer on the night when he came in. Everybody cheered him when he was sitting down.
There was Tom Boyd and Murdo McLeod and a good few players. There was Tosh McKinley and a few others.
Neil Lennon.
Yeah, so it was a good bunch of people, and I think fans like that see that as well. You know, they're a bit next to their heroes, sort of thing.
If you're going to do the Celtic story 20 years ago, and you're going to include the section on Fergus that we have in the show, I mean, he's on stage for about 15 minutes, just on his own, basically, holding court. You couldn't have done that in the sound belief that the audience would have booed him, because there was all this. There were all these fables all over Glasgow. You get into a taxi and there was all these lies about Fergus about how he didn't tip, and you know, it was really, really rude and all this kind of thing. It was just a load of rubbish. And then I was saying about the Daily Record. So I saw this thing, it was actually on Twitter today. The Daily Record, I think it was Daily Record or The Sun, had a newspaper headline, and it said, it was a picture of Saddam Hussein, and Fergus McCann said, one of these men is a despotic, tyrannic madman. The other one is Saddam Hussein. It's just like, the guy never stood a chance, because people's heads were filled with all these lies or these inaccuracies. When in actual fact, it's because he was undermining Murray, because he was the powers that be in the media knew that he was doing things properly from a business sense, and he was also railroading the SFA. Yeah. And we even bring it up in the show about that, all that stuff with the George Cadet transfer, about how abhorrent and disgusting, and how that kind of McCann just exposed this underbelly of Scottish establishment, which we, I think, as Celtic fans were aware existed, but he was like a dog.
Made it clear.
It's that thing now, you're just like, where is that side to the club sometimes? Because you want them just to be like going after all that, you know, going after them. and not been so passive. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people now see that history teaches about McCann, is you go, yes, you actually were a proper Celtic man.
Yeah, I think it's that time's been very kind to Fergus McCann, and rightly so. It's shown that he is a Celtic legend. There's always talk about renaming the stadium after him, but there's so much Celtic history steeped in this that I don't know how you managed to get it all in. Kathleen, how is it for you on stage, going through Celtic as a history and doing things that happened before your time, and then when you get into the time when you were a fan and moving through that, how does that work out for you?
There's a lot in the script when we were rehearsing it that Martin actually had to explain to a lot of us that they didn't understand it, and once he explained it to us, then it gave us a much more in-depth insight on how to actually portray it on stage, because a lot, like you said, a lot of it happened before I was even born, and it didn't make sense to me. Martin, you have had to explain a lot of things. Like, I'd be like, what does that mean? We don't know what that means. A few times, wasn't it, during rehearsals?
I know. Sorry, Kathleen, it was mostly to you. I'm only joking. It was only you. Everyone else did it better. No, I mean, so... I was lucky enough to meet a man called Jerry Finn. He's a professor. He's actually a specialist on, he's an academic specialist on the history of sectarianism in Scotland. Really fascinating guy. And he was the man that did a lot of the research for the original Wildcat production of this. So a lot of the really good stuff from that original production was stuff that kind of remained. So, you know, the fact that, you know, just the stuff that's a bit kind of geeky about Celtic, you know, the fact that they never started wearing the hoops till 1903, the fact that, you know, the board members of this very specific group of men who had different political beliefs and different agendas, just all this kind of stuff that you go, actually, that's, you know, it sounds cliched, but if you know your history, I mean, there's loads of people that, include myself, before I read that Wildcat version of this, I didn't really know my history. I mean, okay, it's stuff that doesn't really deepen your passion for the club and all that, but it's fascinating to know that it's where we all came from, mm-hmm. as fans, you know.
Ken, the biggest thing probably in the Celtic story is Celtic winning the European Cup. You've done the song for it. Don't want to give any away too many spoilers about the show, but how proud were you getting the song in there and seeing the bit where Celtic 1967, the European Cup, Jock Steen, it's the pinnacle of Celtic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well, it's a great subject to write about, you know, and all the things that we did do first. And when we get we build up to that crescendo of the European Cup and then continue up to modern times with quadruple trebles and victories to the Rebels and all these little links as well. No, it's great. It's just great to map all the things that, and also remember certain things, you know, like, because you go through your mind when we're thinking of writing the song, you can through your mind, what was your favourite game? What happened that year? What happened this year? What happened this year? So you can through your memories, and again, I'm older, I'm double the age of the other two musicians in the band, so they're fantastic at the modern stuff. And I think I'm better at long-term memory. I think when you get older, your short-term memory is a wee bit ropey, but your long-term memory is there, and it's kind of written in stone to a certain extent as well, because there's been so many books written about. There's been videos made, he's out there, you know. So you can research a lot of the stuff just to make sure you're telling the truth. Remember, I was telling you the story about the first game I went to, versus Clyde, the first game that I remember going to, and it was a building site basically, apart from the other three parts, right across the jungle. I thought it was 8-1. I was 8-1, and I spoke to Joe Sullivan, who works at the Celtic View. And Joe says, it wasn't, it was 6-1. I was like, no, it was 8-1. And then he showed me, because they've got all the microfilm and all that. He's like, look. And he says, you're right about the team. You're right. He says, but Ronnie Simpson actually never played. He just came on and went like that. He was stripped. He went like that. It was Evan Williams actually was in goals. I'm like, dull. That's two Higgs. So it was 6-1, 8-1, and it was everybody's. Ronnie Simpson did come on a wave, and he had the strip on. You know.
So all the Lisbon Lions were on the pitch.
They were on the pitch. They were on the pitch. I was only nine, man. You know, only nine.
I see a Lisbon Lion every day. Jim Craig lives near me, and I always see him, and I'm too terrified to say hello.
You should.
A bit starstruck.
I know.
I maybe should ingratiate myself one day, but he's lived up this neck of the woods for ages.
I met him before. He's a lovely guy. So he's still
nice guy.
Lovely, knowledgeable on Celtic as well. He'll have you chatting for a while.
I used to cut Tommy Gemmell's hair in the barbers. He used to come in my barbers, and he would give us a £13 tip. And wow, it was so funny because when he came in the door, everybody's cutting the hair, but you could see everybody starting to speed up so that they could get him because he was the biggest tipper. So funny.
That's a good one.
So We have 1967 as a pinnacle of Celtic. We've had a lot of success recently, but on Sunday there, Celtic beat Rangers 1-0 in the latest Glasgow derby. A wee bit unexpected from my point of view. I thought we'd struggle in the game. You guys were getting ready for shows. You were about to go on stage. How was that in the lead up to the game? And how much of the game did you get to see?
For the musicians, we had to do it. We had to do a sound check, so we had to be there at 12. We were trying to make the sound check earlier so we could watch the whole game, but it wasn't working. So we, as I said, that discipline thing, you have to be right there. But we did the sound check really quickly,
yeah,
and we caught most of the first half, and we caught half an hour of the second half. But it was brilliant. That goal was outstanding. We jumped into the Crown Plaza Hotel, which is right next to the Hydro, and there's nobody in the place at all. So they had the other guys, the two sound guys and the other two guys in the band, Kieran and Daniel, had a wee table, and there was nobody else in the place at all. And they'd said, like, we better be quiet because it's quite posh in here and blah, 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 blah. But I wasn't there for that little signal. So Kyogo nearly scored just before the goal, and I went, yeah! And they're like, shh. So I was told to shut up.
What about you, Kathleen? What was it like going on stage just after? Because you must have just heard the news or seen the end of the game and thought, we're going on stage. The crowd will be loving this.
We were standing in the wings at the side of the stage because we go on 5 minutes before the actual show starts. So we're all kind of sitting about on the stage and you can see everybody out in the audience. But when we were standing watching, we had it. Like Charlie had it on his laptop and everybody had the game on. And then my mum and dad said, when I said to you that we heard the audience cheering, we were a minute and a half delayed before on our screens when we were watching it. And my mum said that it was just one person that stood up in the audience and went, yes! Like that, so I don't know. So then everybody cheered, and I don't know if he obviously had got a text from somebody from the game that said that's it, it's the final score's 1-0, because everybody else was still running a minute and a half later. So we didn't get the final score, and everybody was saying, I'm not taking that until we get it final on our screens, that was the final score. And then we all walked on going, 1-0, 1-0, and everybody was cheering. So good. But it just made it extra special.
Some of the actors were doing that, the Kyogo.
Me, I did that, that's my, that is what I do. I do that in the show, and we agreed because Kyogo scored that one goal, everybody would do that going down at that point, and so every one of us did it that night.
Brilliant.
Too funny.
Brilliant.
That's brilliant, man. I was speaking to one of my pals. I've not managed to get along yet, but he was there last week and he said it was great. He obviously said everything was great. Kathleen, he said you were good, but he did highlight, there's so many Martins here, but Martin Quinn, he said he was brilliant in it. How is it working alongside that guy?
Well, he's amazing. Absolutely brilliant at what he does. You can tell that he's got abundance of talent. Like, just watching him, he just captivates you. You just have to stop and watch what he does. And he makes it look so easy. It's amazing. He does Patsy Gallagher. It's fantastic.
He also has, his humour's good. He's got a good sense of humour.
Yeah, he's got a great sense of humour.
Wouldn't tell you any of the wee, but there's just a couple of wee bits, just a wee tiny, they're not even lines, they're just wee bits. And I pish myself every time I see it on stage. because we're at the back watching it. But it's the same wee bit, and they're just daft, but they're dead funny. So you're like, I can't wait for it to happen again. I won't go into details because I'll give the show away, but there's a couple of cracking bits.
Yeah.
Laugh my head off.
Yeah, we don't want to give any of the stuff away. I'm looking forward to going to seeing it. But Martin, if you're trying to sell this to somebody, it's the Celtic story. It talks for itself. But tell us, give us what we're going to see if we go along.
First and foremost, a celebration of the club, of the history, of the fans, of everything that the club stands for in terms of the ethos, the ideology that Walfred set out, how we as the fans and hopefully the board and the club still remember and tell us of the charitable roots of the club. But also, it's a celebration of everything that the fans know. You can't emulate, you can't try and replicate the experience of a game on stage. It's impossible. But what we can try and do is transport you through to times where experiences happen from the fans' perspective. And also, what we're able to do with this, because it's theatre, is make it theatrical and bring people and voices from the past into the present and speak to us, you know, in the present. And I know I'm biased and it's hard for me to be objective about it, but there's so many points in this piece, and to be honest with you, the majority of the bits that I haven't written, it's the creation of the band and it's the creation of the Marvel and the cast that they're coming up with. So many pieces that are so emotional, and it's that kind of thing where, you know, we were saying right at the start, what was your first game? What's your first memories? You get taken by your dad, you get taken by your mum, you get taken by your uncle, whatever. And that bond, that nurture, that mentorship, whatever you want to call it, is the thing that makes you a fan and keeps you a fan, because you want to keep that legacy going. And I think there's something in this all that just gets us about Celtic. You know, there's the Matt McGlone book, The Emotionally Celtic. I've been honestly like a hair trigger away from bursting into tears at some points in this show, because it's just the club is an emotional club.
Yeah.
Everything that the club stands for is an emotional club. But apart from that, people will have a right good night out as well.
I've had people come up to me after the show and say, like grown men and coming up to me and saying, "Hen, I don't cry at anything." He went, "You just had me shedding tears in there, just at poignant moments where it has brought back memories for people and triggered and pulls the heartstrings." I've been crying on stage more than once, and even my mum said that to me. They came and saw it on Sunday afternoon, just after the match. They came that day, and even my mum said to me, "I could see when Walk On was on, I could see that you were crying." And my chin was like going that way, like I'm trying to stop myself from crying. That is exactly what I was like during Walk On that day, because it just was so emotional. When you look out to the audience and see every single person got their scarf up or their torch in their hand, and you can see them singing it from the heart, that is like an amazing experience to be a part of. It does make you feel like you are part of a big family, and everybody's there to support each other. It's fantastic. Such an amazing feeling.
Well, I've got a great idea. I was thinking, me and Kieran were thinking, and Daniel, the musicians, we were thinking it would be a really good idea for us to get flown to Madrid to play at halftime at Atletico Madrid. Play Walk On, you know what I mean? That'd be a good marketing thing, you know what I mean?
There's definitely the budget for that.
Well. Blow all the budget on that. That's great. Martin, that was like a Martin O'Neill speech you gave, a team talk from Martin O'Neill there you gave us. I'm riled up now. And I know what you guys mean, like Celtic's my thing. It was my dad that took me along. Yeah. It's just the thing that I felt attached to from a young age. It's that first love, and it just goes throughout you. My dad's no longer here, so anytime Celtic get a good result, he's the first person I think about. So it's that family, that bond you have with Celtic. And there is times where we'll never walk alone's playing or Celtic get a result, and I'll get the goosebumps and all that. It just gets me, and I just love when players come and you just feel like they get it, like you. And it just Celtic, there's something about Celtic, like Billy McNeil said, there is a fairy tale about this club. It's magical and it's tremendous that yous have managed to bottle this up into a story that people can go and see. It's tremendous what yous have done.
And just for the record, I think Martin Quinn's a hopeless hack. I know that they were saying earlier on that he's great. He's the pits man.
We'll let people judge that when they go and see it. So
everyone said he's pure brilliant. I'm not employed him. He's absolutely he's a pure dream to work with.
You should be taking credit for employing him then. That's picking it. Him out as
a
talent.
I don't take credit for anything. He's the first Scottish Scotty in Star Trek. Well, we're so lucky with the cast we got for this. But I went like to Martin, I was like, so good you were available for this. And he went, it's because of the writer's strike in LA. I was
So there's still plenty of time for people to get along. We've got until the 16th of September. Is it two shows a day?
Two shows on a Saturday and two shows on a Sunday.
Ideal. So plenty of time for people to get along. There's also family discounts if people are taking along the family. And look, Celtic are a family thing, so get yourselves along. Thanks very much for joining me, guys.
That's been a pleasure.
You guys will never walk alone, and if you want to know your history, get along and see the Celtic story. Thanks for listening.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.